Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, Chris here to announce a new short form series of episodes on the podcast called Summaries. Summaries take some of our best long form interviews and even some unpublished interviews and condenses them down to 10 minutes of pure listening pleasure. Summaries are hosted by our digital interns, Alex Ivey and Allison Inverness, wink, wink, and are designed to give you, our valued listeners, just the information you need from each guest. It's a new short form concept for a fast paced world. It's the answer to the 2-hour podcast you want to listen to, but never have the time for. Each new episode of Summaries will be published right here on the Make It feed, and we'll begin publishing them in November this month. We think you'll love it as much as we do. And now, on to the show, and be sure to listen to our new short form podcast series Summaries starting this month. You're listening to Make It, the indie film podcast. Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Make It podcast. I'm your host, Chris Barkley.
And I am Nicholas Bugs. What's up, folks?
And with us today is our esteemed guest, Faith Montoya. Faith, say hello.
Hi, I'm Faith Montoya.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the podcast. We're really lucky to have you. I think when people find out more about what you're involved in and how broad your reach is, they're going to be absolutely floored. So before we get too deep into all the topics we have sort of lined up for today, can you tell everybody what you're all about, what you're excited about today, what you're doing, who you are, all the things?
Yeah, I am a TikToker, as the kids would say. I am a plus size influencer that really focuses on fashion and lifestyle. And I am NAMI's newest brand ambassador.
Oh, congratulations on that.
Yeah, we know a little something about NAMI, but what is NAMI for the audience? Let them know what it is.
It's a nonprofit organization that is the National Alliance of Mental Illness.
We often say something here, and there's a refrain we often repeat, Faith, and it goes like this: filmmakers are people too. And there's so much rejection and so many no's that you get in film. It's really hard to keep your mental health, you know, at tip top shape. Like, you're always being told, not this time, sorry, you're not good enough, or you're led to believe or feel, you know, that way. So, two part question. One is self-serving and the other one is for the audience listening and watching. First, what strategies would you recommend for, especially for actors, I think more than anybody, who go in, work really hard, prepare, and get told no a lot in the audition? Are there any strategies you would recommend for them? And then, you know, to overcome some of those mental obstacles, and obstacles around rejection. And then two, how do me and Nick get to become ambassadors? Because filmmakers are people too. We represent these indie filmmakers. We need to be ambassadors on this board as well.
I think that regarding your first question, it's free rejection therapy. That's what I think of it as. You know, you get a lot of no's, but some people are seeking out those no's because they don't even try. You know, so they live a life of not knowing what rejection is because they didn't even allow themselves to be put into the game. So even being there and allowing yourself to get a no, it may hurt and it may feel like you're inadequate, but you're at least trying, you're playing this game of life. I would rather have 1,000 no's or 1,000 failures if that meant that I at least tried 1,000 times. That means that I think that I'm worth trying over and over and over again. So yeah, I think that's the best way I would cope with it. I've somebody that failed a lot in school as a first generation, going to college. It was really hard not having somebody to navigate life. And I kept failing class after class and I would be like, I'm going to give up. But I graduated and I'm grateful that I did fail those classes because those failures taught me way more than the classes that I got straight A's and kind of breezed through. Those failures taught me what it meant to be true to myself and resilient and showing up for myself, even in moments when all my classmates are passing me by. So
before you tell us how you're going to usher us into NUMMI,
NAMI,
can you just tell us how you built that muscle though? Like, how did you build that muscle up to be able to face those failures?
I wish I could say it was like a one man job. I think society just kind of being a young girl growing up plus size, it felt like life was always kind of like throwing you rejection every day of my life. Even when you're watching TV or, you know, everything you consume, even the people that you interact with, friends and family, like you live in a world where almost virtually everyone doesn't want to look like you, which, you know, is something hard to swallow at a young age. And I don't wish that on my worst enemy, but it built this resilience in me that it's like, I'm going to still be prom queen. I was prom queen. I'm still going to be in pageants. Like, I'm going to do it anyways. So, you know, I think that, and also having an amazing support system. I was raised by three amazing women who always poured into me and made me feel like I could fly, even my wings were small. So I think having a combination of those two things really built that resilience in me. I remember my mom, she sent me like cookies once when I failed a class or failed a test. And I was so mad. I was like, why are you sending me gifts? Like, I just failed. Like, don't send me anything. And she was like, it's okay. You still tried. And I'm proud of that. And you're going to try again. And I think having that kind of backbone or like love and support to go back to just made me the resilient person and be able to build that muscle.
Wow. I mean, shout out to the three ladies in your life that raised you. I had a similar situation where I failed in sixth grade or something like that. And instead of getting grounded again, I got like a brand new pair of Adidas, I remember. And that still sticks with me because a really attuned parent or guardian knows when you're getting beat down too much. Like, yes, you're not succeeding, but you're taking too many body shots, yeah. Right? Like, you need a break. You need something good to happen in your life just to, or you're going to spiral.
Right.
And just, being able to recognize that without being told that is super, super valuable. I love that story.
Yeah, there's something I want to key in on there as well. I think that there's a lot of talk out there from, I would say influencers are of different types, whether they're rappers, they're politicians, right? They're social media influencers. And you hear a lot of this conversation about, you know, pull yourself up from your bootstraps kind of thing, where it's like, you just have to find that in you and you just have to figure it out and you have to turn it around. And for me, I just don't think that that's the truth. I think it gets back to what you said, Faith, is that you actually have to lean on other people. And in some cases, people don't have those people just delivered to them, right? They're not just those three wonderful, what do you call them? Fairy godmothers, right? Delivered into their lives. Like they might've been for you exactly. It's a privilege and it's great. But what do people do when they don't have that gifted to them? And I think that that's one of the things that maybe NAMI was founded upon, right? There's these organizations out there that if you know about them, right, you can lean on them because not all of us can just turn it around, right? We don't have that necessarily inborn in all of us. So what is your thought on that? Like, how do people go out and find other people, even finding you, right? Like someone to share the struggle with. What is your thought on just finding the help that you need if you don't have it already?
I think that, you know, like you were saying, NAMI presents these amazing resources because even beyond the amazing women that I had, we only had, you know, the education that was afforded to us. When it came to like mental health and therapy, like that was a way broader conversation that was way out of my class. Like we didn't believe in those things, you know, growing up, like that's right. not a conversation. So I think having those type of resources, that type of community, even online, like I always say, social media is such a beautiful, powerful force because I learned so much and you go into comment sections and you see so many like-minded people that you interact with, you know, and I love that type of shared community. And obviously it's not as tangible as like somebody in your life, but I think having the humility to know, I don't want to, like you said, pull it up by the bootstraps, like that individualistic mentality is what's going to keep us like kind of fighting for our lives on our own when life should not be that hard. We are meant to be leaning on each other. You know, that song, Lean On Me, like
that's right. 100%.
It's there for a reason, you know? So I think finding those outside, you know, community and being there for others can help them be there for you. And then also this online community that, you know, I feel like NAMI provides those resources and finding influencers or people that align with what you believe in and finding that community there too.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's tremendous. And pivot this into NAMI a little bit if you want to, but I am curious what people get wrong about, or what does society get wrong about being a plus size model?
I think people, one thing they definitely get wrong is that we're lazy, you know, or we're people that are like, are always inherently unhealthy, which is also like the standard of health these days. Like who determines that, you know, like is it people that drink alcohol? Is it people that vape? Is it people that do hookah on the weekends? You know, is it people that are having like protected sex? Like, you know, what is the standard of health and why is it that people use that as a reason to be shameful and nasty to an individual they have no idea about? You know, I could be somebody that just lost 100 pounds, but because, you know, I'm not somebody that isn't visibly skinny to you right now, I'm deemed unworthy and deemed to feel like you get to give me all these like nasty sayings, you know, like I just, sometimes I hear the most gruesome, vile things. And I know that there's other plus size models alike that also receive that, you know, and there's a lot of conversations I've seen. Podcasters I've seen say that, like, if you're a model, like, the least, like, you can't be fat and a model, like, that kind of defeats the purpose. But I think modeling is about convincing somebody why they should buy these things. And what better way than to see it on yourself?
That's a great
point. You know?
Yeah, like, that's a great point.
That to me is what makes me want to buy something, because I'm like, oh, wow, that looks really good on her. And I think that's why my audience has such a deep connection with me, because they didn't know something would look as good as it does on a body top like theirs until they saw me in it. You know? So I think that is such a common misconception that like models can't be fat or that they're lazy because they are fat. Cause I do pull, I'm a very active person, you know, and I know a lot of models that are constantly in the gym, you know, but their ideal body type isn't to be super thin. You know, and that's okay too. Like sometimes people have kids, you know, sometimes bodies yep. look different and like, that's okay.
Yeah. They talk dirty about Jessica Simpson. I think it was her third kid. She had gained weight and, you know, that was like a big transformation where I think she lost like 100 pounds after that last kid. And there was a lot of conversation about her. And I think that, I'm not sure, I got to check this out. Just thinking about it. I think that through that journey, that might've actually impacted her clothing line at the time as well. I could have sworn that there was some level of expansion in the types of things that she was providing because of a lot of the talk around her weight. And it's crazy, right? Like this woman just had her third kid and like everybody's up in her business about her weight. It's like, y'all can't talk about anything else. What's up with that?
Right. Like she risked her life, you know, to bring kids into the world and to sit here and try to scrutinize her body and not allow it to heal properly because she's so in the mindset of like, gotta bounce back. It's like, you know, I was telling my boyfriend this yesterday, like it's a prison. It's a prison that, you know, women allow themselves to like stay in, and they want other women to be in it with them as well sometimes. Cause they're like, how dare you love yourself when you're not thin? That's not fair. You know, like that's crossing the line.
Yeah. I mean, you don't need me to tell you this, but you're very, very beautiful, right?
Thank you.
Unusually pretty. Thank you. I heard you say a couple of moments ago, like growing up, people not wanting to, you know, look like you. I'm like, shit, they must be crazy. everybody want to look like you. Like, I know what you mean, but at the same time, mm-hmm. It's objectively true. When I say objectively, I mean scientifically. You have incredible facial symmetry.
Thank you. Yeah, section about some science.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. I'll put it in there.
I absolutely will. And Nick, I wanted you to comment on this a little bit too with me. Is like from the Black community POV. Like we have a lot of things we got to get right, and I was even questioning the other day, like, was I, the things I was raised to believe, I'm starting to question whether I was raised by some of the worst people in entertainment of all time. And like, was I made to believe in norms that were actually, you know, quite detrimental to my own development and to the way I view other people and other things. Like, if you think about, like, I grew up in the 90s, and it's like, think about how many people from the 90s are now in jail or on trial for stuff. If you think about
celebrities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about how many, of our role models, Nick, right? Like in entertainment, think about the stuff that we saw. You know, I've mentioned it a lot of times, so like 8 Ball and MJG's Coming Out Hard album could not come out today. Just could not come out today. It is so wild. A Top Authority album could not come out today. You couldn't have like a Dr. Dre video where they're pouring champagne all over a fake Mariah Carey in that video because she won't, quote unquote, put out. Like, that's just not something we deal with. Like, we just don't. We don't have patience for that today. But I'm raised in that. You're raised in that. We're soaked in it. Right. So we have this retraining we have to do. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that, Nick, Faith?
Yeah. I mean, no, you're right. And I think that's what's really interesting in this kind of like the changing of the guard, the changing of the generations.
Whereas, the mental health aspect alone, Nick, sorry to jump in, but like, think about how you're not allowed to really, not till recently, like be gay. You're not allowed to be weak.
Well, not to have, or like, just not to have feelings, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Feelings. So I think that there's a changing of the guard. So the changing of the guard is really people like Faith. The idea of an influencer, a social media influencer, or an influencer who wasn't a celebrity didn't exist before.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so why that is such a big deal is because now the regular person, right, has a platform and can speak out against this stuff. There were no platforms like this for us. So you had to consume whatever you could say mainstream media provided to you. That was it. And I think that's starting to break apart through people, like not just influencers, right? Because I'm not going to sit here and put every influencer on a pedestal, right? And I know Faith, I'm sure you've had some experiences with some so-called influencers that are not on the up and up or about anything more than their business, right? So the people like yourself who are like, no, I need to be there for others, whether it's, you know, plus size individuals or people struggling with mental illness or mental health, you're giving a platform where those platforms were, like Chris is saying, they weren't provided, or basically they were told, you were told that you couldn't be that version of yourself. You couldn't be, you know, I wouldn't even call it overweight. You couldn't be of a certain weight. You couldn't cry. Mm-hmm. Anxiety, depression, those things don't, exactly. Those things don't exist, right? Like that's not even a thing in a Black male. That's not, that's for white people.
Exactly.
Right. Right. Don't even think about that. Right. So I think that for me, Chris, is interesting. And one of the things on this plus size, I wouldn't even call it model, but situation. An article that I recently read, and I'll just read it here. Was it in 2016? Leslie Jones announced her struggle to get designers to dress her for the Ghostbusters reboot premiere. And on Twitter at the time, right, X now, she said, "It's so funny how there are no designers wanting to help me with a premiere dress for a movie." I mean, think about that. Like, that's half of the award show, right? They spend 2 hours before the show starts just walking people down the red carpet and asking exactly, and asking the question, what are you wearing? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a big part of this. And that's what, again, Faith is seeing. Like, you don't see yourself in these people. Like, the designers aren't even designing the dresses for people who are going to be on the red carpet. Mm-hmm. It's just an amazing thing. But I think, again, there's a changing of the guard, right? That is changing, and we're seeing it change. And that was back in 2016, right? Here we are in 2024. It's really not that long ago, but I think a lot is changing, and I'm happy and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that I come to terms with this a lot, especially when you are raised around people that kind of like grew up in the 90s and the 80s, and it was such a like different time. And although those things we can look back on sometimes are a little bit controversial or even like cringe, microaggressive, yeah. I think it is something that I can look back on and be like, wow, we've progressed so far from these things. Because people will say like, oh, now people are too sensitive. But I'm like, are we sensitive, or are we just no longer allowing like ignorance, you know, and like being like, okay, now we know better, we do better, which is okay. That's how we progress as society forward. And you know, to say like back in the 2000s, homophobia, I remember it was a really common thing for people to be like, I'm not scared of gay people. That doesn't exist.
Yep.
You know, and now it's happening with fatphobia. People are like, I'm not afraid of fat people. That does not exist. But it's like, there are statistics out there that fat people are discriminated even at work. People are less likely to hire you if you are plus size, you know, like airlines, roller coaster rides, clothing sizes, like discrimination across healthcare. That is one of the main facets that fat people are constantly like catching the discrimination and the short end of the stick by, because healthcare providers are showing their own biases and research that they will not give you proper care just because you are plus size. And I'm a victim of that. I literally lost my, you know, gallbladder and almost other organs because a doctor refused to treat me because she thought it was because of my weight that I was feeling any type of pain. And I was only 21 years old in college, really active person, you know? So it's like those type of things that it's going to take some time for people to come around. And I think having these open conversations and being able to be platformed and discuss fatphobia, because I didn't even know what it was when I probably first started on TikTok. I didn't even know about my own internalized fatphobia. And kind of unpacking that on a platform with millions of people is hard. Because then, you know, they're like, oh, what you said was fatphobic, even if it was against myself. And I'm like, whoa, like, I'm sorry. You know, I'm grateful that my audience gives me a lot of grace and is willing to educate me on those things, because just because you get a platform or, you know, you turn 25, it doesn't give you a crash course on all of the nuances of things that happen in society that also you can be a victim of, and you can also be a perpetrator of. So yeah, it's a lot of unlearning, and I'm glad that I do have a platform, and I'm glad that I do have people and other influencers that educate me so that I can educate my greater audience. And I think that's just a beautiful way that we can move forward, you know? And I think even in communities of color, it's been something that's like, so like taboo, you know, especially about when
super taboo.
Genetically people of color are predisposed to have more fat than than white people, than European people. And like, it's obviously sometimes in muscle, sometimes it's in, you know, hips area. These are just things that, you know, are predisposition. And that's not the case for everybody. Like, obviously there's petite people in every single race and ethnicity, but it's like holding ourselves to this European beauty standard is only going to, you know, keep who down.
Well, that's the key. I was going to mention that. You hit it on the head. There's a beauty standard that I guess you could say certain parts of the media are trying to make it homogenous. That's been the issue. We're all trying to then shift into this one thing. But if you were to step back from that and then look at all of the cultures that existed before we tried to make it homogenous, the ones that even exist today, just look elsewhere. Just look outside the window, right? Look beyond your borders a little bit, and you'll see how people of different sizes, different colors are just celebrated. You know, that we know for a fact there's, you know, parts of Africa where, you know, if you are a plus size person, you are the most attractive person in the room, right? Yeah. It is a sign of health and wealth to yeah. be that way, right? So I think that that's the challenge, or that's, I guess that's all of our challenge, is to say, well, no. Look beyond, and I won't even say beyond your borders or beyond your walls. I'll just say this. Look beyond that flipping television screen. Look right. beyond the movie screen, right? Look beyond that little box that only shows you a small image of what society, human society, looks like. And then you'll start to see the beauty in all things. Like, that's the key. Just look beyond what they're packaging, right? Look at the unpackaged, and right. man, there's beauty out there.
Really, really well said. And you mentioned TV, Nick, and I'll give you a small example of what I'm starting to call these smack yourself moments, where I'm having to rethink my training on this, right? Like, I'm watching Slow Horses, which I'm getting into so late, but okay. I'm watching Slow Horses on Apple TV Plus. Shout out to Apple TV Plus and Slow Horses. Gary mm-hmm. Oldman is great in that show. And before the show comes on, it gives you a viewer discretion warning that there's a lot of flashing lights and, you know, beware. And I found myself like, come on, guys, like, really, we have to, like, every single person in the world has to get a message. And then I had that slap myself moment, like, stop. Like, wait, that's your old training. Mm-hmm. Like, what's, society is better because they put a message like that on before the show. So what's your problem, you grumpy old bastard? Like, why do you care? It's because I'm so used to not having that be considered. Mm-hmm. I'm used to not having larger entertainment consider others. I'm accustomed. We said that on one of our other episodes about being accustomed to stuff. So I'm accustomed. And so now it's like, wait, that's a net positive for everybody. I need to chill.
Right.
Faith, you mentioned your platform, and I think we'd be remiss if we did not about your platform. And tell me if I have this number wrong. You have like an aggregate of 5 or 6 million followers across TikTok, Instagram, other social. Your YouTube page is nearing 60 million views. Just again, stop me if I'm wrong. I am curious about some of the tactics you've used. There's a lot of people on here that are filmmakers that need to grow their following, that need to grow their influence, that need to be more seen. The other people that watch your film lovers and also want to have YouTube pages are influenced themselves. Can you break down some of the best sort of growth and engagement tactics you use to build your following? Is there anything that this audience can learn about that?
Yeah, I think, well, if you don't know how I kind of started, it was because I shaved my head. I was completely bald, and I just posted a video every week for 52 weeks straight of my hair growing. Literally, that is it. And the reason why is because I went on YouTube, and I was looking at, like, hair growth videos, because I wanted to be like, how fast is my hair going to grow back if I shave it? Like, I was so afraid. And I would only see the daily progressions or the monthly ones. And I saw a lack there. Where are the weekly ones? There was this new platform called TikTok. So, like, I didn't have any type of following. I was just a substitute teacher that was just like, I didn't see nobody else do it. I'm going to try to see if I actually keep up with it. And I did. And at the end of those 52 weeks, I was at 1 million followers, 100 million views. And probably awesome. By like month two or three of me doing it, I also started incorporating more and more of like other facets of me, because, like, obviously I'm not just a girl with a shaved head whose hair is growing out. You know, I was a substitute teacher. I did get my degree in psychology, and I was actually studying for my MCAT because I wanted to go to med school. You know, I was also a single girl living in a new city and sharing my experiences of, like, dating. Like, I would literally, like, go on Tinder on live and be like, guys, help me. What should I say to these people? Like, should I swipe right? You know, I would let my audience kind of, like, know me and let them know all of, like, the ins and outs. Like, it really had little to do with fashion when I first started. Fashion was just a part of who I was through college as a girl, you know. And then I realized, wow, like, so many people love, you know, the fact that I can find so many pieces, and they're like, where'd you get this from? I can't ever find stuff like that in my size. So, you know, seeing that they took that interest and seeing that brands saw that I was so able to market all their outfits for them, that's kind of how, like, that pivot happened. But I think it's really don't niche down. People will try to tell you, like, if you're a person that wants to, like, make films and things, like, yes, make your short films, but in between those, give us pieces of who you are, why this means something to you. You know, I think people have related to so many aspects of my story. Even, like, I make videos about me and my mom's relationship, and people love those things. Mm-hmm. Videos about, you know, me and my boyfriend, that has nothing to do with, like, fashion or plus size, but, like, just being a well-rounded person makes people feel connected to you and want to, like, keep watching to every step you take on the social media realm. So I will always say consistency and don't niche down. Be who you are, every aspect of that.
You hear that, Nick?
That's cool. So look, Faith, I didn't grow up like that, right? So the challenge, and he's like, look at Chris pointing me out, right? So I'm sitting here, I'm like,
looking,
yeah,
right,
that's
you, big daddy.
Yeah, man, that's the journey, right? And it's tough. I'm just saying, like, it's tough, especially, again, like, if you didn't grow up like that. Like, I grew up private. You don't tell anybody anything. I mean, I had friends in school who would say that to me. I'd be like, Nick, like, what's the deal, man? You don't tell me anything. Like, they'd ask me, are you dating this girl? I'm like, man, I mean, I'm talking to her, but, like, that's it, right? Because I just didn't know what they were going to do with that information. You know how people can be, right? If I said I'm dating her, next thing you know, I hear from three other people that I'm doing something else with her that I might not be doing. And it's like, I don't want you to be empowered with the information about my life. Yeah. But again, things are changing, right? Expectations are changing. Things that mm-hmm. are acceptable are changing. And I'm changing, right? I got a podcast now. Like, I'm out there. I'm doing my thing. I'm trying, right? I'm stepping into this space mm-hmm. where I'm willing to give a little bit more of myself and be real. But it is a struggle. I can't be the, I don't think I could be the guy where I'm like, every day I'm putting something out there. You know, my kids want to do that, right? They're like, yeah, dad, we want YouTube channels, and we're going to overshare. I'm like, yeah. Nah, not in my house. I'm not, I don't want everybody seeing where I live. But you're right though. That is the way, that is the way that you create that connection right. with other people is
but I think
the
there's
human
like a boundary.
Connection.
Yeah. I definitely agree with what you're saying. Cause I'm very like private as well in that sense. I'm a Scorpio. I don't know if y'all know signs okay. or anything, yeah, but like we're known for being mysterious. Like we, you know, mm-hmm. we're not. And I think I am too. Like my boyfriend, my hard launch of him, you know, they say, keep it secret or soft launch. No. 1 week after we started dating, posted a video of him. A million likes. Not a million, oh, wow. a million likes. So like he was out there. It's been 3 years. Like he's been in so many of my videos and they've gotten millions and millions of views, likes. They don't know his name. They don't know his tag. They don't know anything about him besides he's Faith's boyfriend. You know, he is a side character in my life and he loves that. He's a private person too. You know, he doesn't really do the social media stuff. He poses for the pictures, goes to the events with me, but like he loves the normalcy of just like not having to share all aspects of his life with the internet, you know? So I think setting those boundaries, like, you know, you can say you have kids, but don't tell nobody their names. You know, right. you can yep. say how old they are, what theme their birthday party is going to be, but like, don't really share the intimacies of like, what kind of struggles are they going through? You know, like I don't talk about what I fight about, or those type of things. Cause those are for me and those are for my friends when I call them and say like, guys, I need advice, you know, or help. Like I'm not going on the internet. Like, oh man, piss me off. And you know, so I think finding that right. boundary, because it is true. I feel like a lot of people will fall into this trap where like, I need to overshare. And you know, it could also be like a privacy breach. You know, people feel mm-hmm. too comfortable. Like, I could only imagine my boyfriend, people still find him and they would still DM him. If I tagged him and everything, I'm sure people would still like, they would probably blow up his DMs and be like, yep. you know, this is something of this. So I definitely agree. There's, you know, that limitation. Cause I felt a little like eerie at first, but then I'm like, I have control, you know, I have control of this narrative. You know, I can be as open as I want, but I can also keep things for myself.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
And I think you're using social the right way in terms of that balance, right? I have so many friends, and Nick and Papa Bear, you might even know some of these people, but what they'll do is they'll write something really personal online, really personal paragraphs of text and copy, and they'll want the followers to adjudicate the fight between them and maybe a family member.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, oh my God, no, please do not tell us about the fight you and your whatever is having. And we're mm-hmm. not going to, and what you want, it's like the therapy fantasy that married couples have where, oh, we're going to a therapist. And then you go to a therapist and what you want is the therapist to agree with everything you're saying.
Yeah.
And then when it doesn't happen, that therapist is shit. We're going
right. The therapy doesn't work. Yep. Therapy doesn't
work. Yeah. You know, it's like they're using social media as a therapist instead of a way to sort of have someone follow your story the way you're doing it. So kudos to you. I think that's great.
There's one more thing that Faith has done that you and I haven't done, and that's live in a creator house.
So many things.
Yeah. Like, what is that like? Right. We've talked about it before, like the TikTok house and the things that people don't really know happens behind the scenes.
I was just going to ask that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Faith is the one that you were in was more open. Like there was like a kind of like a, not necessarily a show, but what is it? Last to Leave in Miami. Yes. Right. So that it was more open. It wasn't like a hidden TikTok house where people didn't realize that people don't actually live there. Yeah. It was very open that you guys were there, but like, what was that like to live in a creator house and kind of get the red carpet treatment the entire time?
It was interesting. I think it was interesting because, you meet a lot of influencers and you kind of realize like they have had a life that set them up to be an influencer. Parents that like could financially support them in ways, not saying like everybody in the house is like that, but you'll see this like in the influencer world. And that was not the case for me. I had like three jobs in high school, five jobs in college, working 60 to 80 hours a week. I was on food stamps, Medicaid, government assistance, you know, up until I swear I did not even quit my teaching job because I was financially like afraid I was to be like, you know, independent. And when I had 2 million followers, I still had 2 million followers and I was still working a job because of the fear of like, I need the financial stability of a paycheck. You know, I need my benefits. You know, those are things that I've always had in my mind. You know, I was a student that didn't have a lot of financial support besides from like FAFSA, but like from your parents and things. Mm-hmm. So coming into a creator house, you realize everybody has different work ethics. And I don't think that has anything, that's not a fault of theirs. Like shout out to parents that provide and like, you know, stick through their children, even past 18. Right. Like I will never, ever hate on anybody for that. But the work ethic.
I'm down with nepotism.
I'm down. You know, I'm down with it. Like I get it. I think kids deserve a soft life. And I always praise parents that like give their kids the opportunity to kind of like be like the world is your oyster, you know? Mm-hmm. And I love that my mother gave me the opportunity to also do that. But she also let me know at a really young age that like what that costs and what the work you have to put in to get it. And, you know, it gave me a really, really good, like, what's the word? When you're like hardworking, but that's
good work ethic.
Yes. A good work ethic. Diligence. That word slipped my mind. Yeah. She gave me a really good work ethic at a very young age. So you come into a creator house and you kind of just see how like people work at different vibes, different times, you know, like the work ethic might not be there. And I can't even like always shame them for it. Cause I'm like, I get it. You know, like this doesn't feel like do or die for you. But for me, it always felt like everything I did was like do or die. And it kind of sucked being in like always a scarcity mindset. And I'm kind of moving out of that, but definitely like I went from teaching to like being in a creator house and it was such like a mind F, you know, like I went from teaching students to like going to the Super Bowl and backstage at Coachella. And for once, like seeing people have like a lackadaisical life and it was nice, but I think a part of me kind of was like, what is going on? Like, you know, this shouldn't be this easy. So I think that was a hard part of like navigating a creator house. And I don't think I've ever like spoken about that publicly either, you know, but I did love it. I did love the opportunity because it brought me into so many rooms and I've been going to concerts since I was such a young girl. So being partnered with like Live Nation, we had all the access and I know so many plus size girls were like, wow, this plus size girl is like in a section at Live Miami, a notoriously like fat phobic area where, you know, they'll be bouncers being like, unless you're blonde and thin, you're not getting in, you know? So to have that kind of access, and also being able to like collaborate with people that were like dancers, you know, that a DJ, you know, just so many like different niches of people. It was really interesting and I will always be grateful for what it taught me. And I still have such a good relationship with the whole L2L.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step 1, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step 2. Collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa welcome bonus.
Step 3. Play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games. All for free?
Step 4. Unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
That's so cool. And I think those relationships, like, are you still leveraging those relationships? Do you guys share each other's stuff? Do you kind of, you know, put each other on a pedestal? Do you how does that work? Cause I know you're not going to be friends with everybody. Like, you can't do that. I can't say that. But did you find some people where, like, you still have kind of that personal and working relationship? Because one of the things that I think Chris and I have talked about, especially with our filmmaking community, if you can find somebody to platform you, right, that's key. And it's true in film. We know that. I mean, every major celebrity actor is a platform. That's why you put them in your movie, right? Of course, because they've got class, they've got skill, they've got the art and all that. Yes, of course. You want people who can do the job, but you're also picking these people because they can platform you. But I was just wondering, like, are you working with any of them? Do they continue to platform each other so that you guys can just keep doing what you're doing? Hmm.
Well, like, half my housemates unfollowed me. Like, the minute they said, yeah. But
okay.
The connections that I feel like truly matter, which are, you know, one of the other housemates that I had who I, you know, near and dear, like, we're still getting invited back to, like, festivals and getting to, like, you know, still, like, see each other in passing. And I still am working with, you know, Live Nation. So I built that partnership with them. And, you know, I just went to EDC for the first time ever this year because of that. And I left that content creator house almost 2 years ago. So to still, like, be, you know, now they have new members. They have new members in the house and I make friends with them, you know, and I don't take things personally, you know. I'm like, it is what it is. Maybe I'm not everybody's cup of tea, and that's okay, because I know my work will always speak for me.
That's right. 100%. Cause I know, Chris, you get into that sometimes, and Chris can get into his feels about the people unfollowing. They're like, yo, we supported you. We still support you. Like, why would you unfollow? And I try to just say, look, sometimes people just, maybe their focus is in a different area. They're just not checking for us. That doesn't mean they don't like us, right? It's just for some reason they're just, you know, cleaning things out, and maybe they're doing a different kind of focus. Maybe they're focusing on a different area. Who knows what it is, right? But I don't put that on myself. That's their thing, right? You know, I'm not stressing their thing.
The main thing there, Nick, is that you have to understand that you are not the sun that rises in the morning for everybody. Right. So this idea that they are actually consciously thinking of you is false. Certainly you're on some people's minds and hearts, right? I've always loved the Sean Lennon line, life is mostly what you don't see. But there's another part of that, which is they have their own life. They don't see that your socks are mismatched. They're not paying attention to you at all, right? They don't know that. And so, but inside you can make the mistake of internalizing that and saying, and making a judgment and adjudication on yourself, right? Like, I somehow caused this. No, it could have been anything. I know you're around a lot of influencers, not just in the house, but in general faith. Is there anything that you're seeing that influencers on the rise are doing that has held them back? Are there mistakes that you would warn others to say, hey, don't, you know, this is going about it the wrong way? What mistakes do would-be influencers make?
I would definitely say don't take anything personally, kind of like with the whole unfollowing thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I always tell my audience, hey, if seeing me makes you feel less than or inadequate, unfollow me. Not because I don't want you here, not because I don't want, you know, your support, but because I want you to be in the best state of mind. And I feel like we've all had, like, these influencers that we follow, and then you look at their life and you're like, dang, mine isn't as good, or I'm not where I should be, especially if they're younger than you or they're your age. Like, this person's getting married, this person just bought a house. Like, if those things are making you feel inadequate and not feel good, I don't want you to consume that. But some people will, for the sake of, they want to obviously grow their following. They don't care about those things. So they will, you know, take everything that somebody says personally, like, oh, you know, that's crazy that you're able to buy that, but you know, you don't have enough money for this. You know, they'll be real critical of you. They'll be hypercritical of you. And
right.
I would say, don't take it personally. You know, like, that's fine if you think that I should spend my money elsewhere or I should be doing this, but like, you don't have to be here either. You know, that's okay. Yeah. 'Cause like, know, not all huge followings are good followings. And I will say if there was like a prize on like curating a community, I should probably win like the Nobel of it, because I have such an audience that like, you can tell really kind of like cares for me and cares for you. Like when I win, it feels like they win. And that is a very unique thing. It doesn't feel like they're like, oh my God, why can't I be doing enough? I make them feel like if she did it, I can too. If it worked for her, it can work for me. And to build that, you just have to have that genuineness. That's like, I'm not for everybody. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. So it's okay if you have to go, you know, like I think about all the times that like some things have like caused me to be canceled or whatever. There are some people that come out the woodworks and I'll be like, I haven't liked her since blah, blah, blah. I didn't like her anyways. And I'm like, that's okay. Because then there's hundreds of other people going to bat for me saying, you know, that's not how she is. You know that like, you know, she showed herself again and again. And I'm like, wow, that is a community that really loves you and that, you know, feels you and sees you and doesn't just look at you as somebody that like they can put on their Pinterest board.
Boom. That's a great point. And Nick, should we get into some things we should know?
I think we should. This is perfect timing. I know PB's been chomping at the bit, waiting for this moment. Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay. Yeah. What just happened?
You chomped at the bit, bro.
I chomped at my bit.
Yeah.
Do you have any insights with your background in mental health, PB? For Faith, before you ask the question, is there anything that?
Well, not necessarily insights. I did for Faith, but I did
maybe
have a
give
thought.
The audience maybe a sense of what your background is, just so you.
Well, I've got 30 years in mental health. I worked at our local mental health institution and doing behavioral work. So, and I've had an alliance. With NAMI as well, working with them, we held conferences for them as well. But Nick said something earlier about he didn't want people to be empowered by information they got from or about him. But that's the exact opposite of what an influencer is. That's exactly what they want to do, is empower others with the information about you. So
interesting. Yep.
Faith is doing a great job. She's helping so many people.
Thank you.
Faith, I'm over here learning stuff too. I'm growing. I am. You know, that's right. Every day I'm growing, and it's a blessing, I will say, to have people like young Chrissy and PB in my life to help me grow. I'll say that.
Well, thank you for calling me young.
He called me young just to be clear. Well, just to be clear.
Yeah, no, let me be clear.
I didn't include you. So with today's things we should know, as often is the case, it involves history, and we always learn from our past. And so the question is, what fashion brand was the first to coin the usage of the term plus size, and in what year?
Oh, wow.
That's actually a hard question.
That is a hard question.
How far back does that term go?
Okay. Can I give a guess, PB? Because I think...
Yes, that's what's expected. See, each person gives their own guess.
Thank you. So here's the deal. Here's the deal. Faith has an advantage being in fashion on us. Mm. But we have an advantage because we know you are a tricky, tricky guy. You're a tricky guy. And you have put a twist on this question, and you've hit it just below the surface. You're like Hannibal Lecter of trivia, I can tell that there's evil below.
I resent that remark.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
There's evil below. And okay. So here's the deal. I think the answer is legs, L-E-G-G-S. Mm-hmm. And they introduced the term in 1996.
That so is specific.
It is very specific. And
why that year?
You mean the hosiery company, right? Where they yes. had the little egg that yes. had the hosiery inside it. And it was legs, what she knows how to use them, I mm-hmm. think was the tagline.
You have to think outside of the skirt, Nick.
Yeah,
to figure out what he's doing to you. Well, you have to figure out what he's doing to you. This is going to be something unusual. That's my guess. Wow. Nick, do you have anything?
96, man. I feel like I was going to take it back further than that. I don't know the brand.
That's also his thing. Watch it be 1848.
Yeah, I know, right? No, 1918.
In 1848, J.W. Walters.
Right, 1914. Oh, yeah. Man. How about I'll swing it to Faith while I think about it. I'm like, because I'm thinking about, I feel like it was earlier than that. I feel like it was like the 40s or 50s. And I'm thinking store brands. I feel like that was more what was what you'd see out there. It was like Macy's, right? Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't that they didn't really, the clothing brand itself, I felt like, wasn't as big as the stores at the time, right? So it was like, was it Macy's introducing a plus sized brand? But he did say clothing brand, so now I'm stuck. But anyway, Faith, what do you think? I'm stuck.
No, I said fashion brand.
Yeah, fashion. Okay.
Okay. So releasing of clues. I mean,
it could be, right? It could be like, let's just say, I'm just going to throw this out there just to not belabor it, but I'm going to say Nordstrom. Because I feel like Nordstrom had a fashion brand at one time before they became more synonymous with...
I have a cashmere Nordstrom sweater.
Right, before they became more synonymous with the store, right, the storefront. So I'd say Nordstrom, and I want to say... what'd you say, Chris? 96? I'm going to say 56.
56. Okay, I'm writing this down. Nordstrom, okay. 1956. Yep. Makers of fine cashmere sweaters where Sherpas climbed the mountains of Turkey to get the finest threads. Faith.
Okay, Faith.
This is a wild guess. Lane Bryant, maybe.
Ooh. That's a great guess.
Maybe like, I want to say late 60s, maybe, or... Yeah, I'm just
going to
go with 69.
69. Oh, all right. I thought she was going to go 66. 69. Okay, very good.
Yeah. And why Lane Bryant?
Just because I know that they are a pioneer in the space. Yep. They were in every mall I knew growing up. So, you know, they were like Torrid before Torrid. And they specialized in wear like Victoria's Secret almost, but for plus size women. So I feel like those are just what's coming to mind. But yeah, that's my guess.
All right, let's do it, PB.
We're up to Nick, right?
No, Nick already did. Said Nordstrom, 1956.
Yeah,
56.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to give this one.
His brain stopped working when you gave your answer, Nick. So,
Well, I think of Nordstrom's not as a fashion brand, but as a store.
Exactly, as a That's store. Right.
Yeah, think outside the box. So, he's trying to trick you.
Yeah, we're going to have to give it to Faith. It was Lane Bryant.
Wow!
But listen for the reason why, and it was The term was first coined in the 20s in 1922.
Wow.
Not recently.
I knew it. Now,
the earliest usage of the term plus size was by American women's fashion brand Lane Bryant. The company was founded by young widow Lena Bryant at the turn of the last century. She supported herself and her son by sewing clothing for expectant mothers and newborns. Oh. So plus size clothing came out of needing maternity clothes.
Wow.
That's amazing. Take
That's a thing Faith should know, right?
That is a thing we all should know, and as a thing That's Faith right. should know.
It's she'll, amazing.
She'll break. That's an icebreaker at a party.
I feel enlightened. And it's Lane Bryant, but her name was Lena, so she just swapped the E and the A?
Mm.
That's that's fascinating.
Wow.
Take a bow, Faith.
Thank you. No, honestly, I feel like, whoa.
take a bow.
Give you one more sentence that will add to the information.
Okay.
With a humbled combined store and living quarters on Fifth Avenue in New York, Bryant became well known for her high quality garments. So she started in New York on Fifth Avenue.
Yeah.
Which is an expensive rent right now.
The more you know.
100%.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and Faith is right. There was a Lane Bryant in every mall that I went to growing up. So, and I think even one of my sisters worked at a Lane Bryant. So I should have guessed that, but I was too caught up in the trickery of Papa Bear. But Papa Bear, that was definitely a thing we should know. And thank you so much. Nick, do you smell something in the air? I smell...
A culture check.
See, I'm trying to knock PB off his chair. You know, that's the goal, right? That's, I got him. I saw that cup, that mug wiggled a little bit. All right. So,
rocked back and forth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I do have a culture check for us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this culture check comes from, I would say, part of Faith's past. Now, I had the fortune of watching, you know, many a YouTube video with Faith in it. And one of them, Faith talks about how there was a very difficult time in your life. We won't get into what that was at the moment. You can mention it if you'd like to, but it was a very difficult time in your life. And you actually stepped away from YouTube because of the difficulties associated with this. And the reason you stepped away from YouTube at this difficult time was because of how people were commenting, what they were saying, and how just disgusting they were being about that life situation. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to, if you recall what this life situation was that made you step away, you know, you can always mention it if you want to. Would you like to mention it?
Did it have to do with like grief, I believe?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. No, I was a very jarring situation. I did have a close friend of mine pass away. And I was literally on live with him like 24 hours before he passed away. So kind of having to share grief for the first time ever in my life, that was like so big. And I didn't really know how to like kind of go through that. And people would like use him as a jab to me. And I went to the Super Bowl, and I was just like, you know, me here, well, like all the fat phobes are at home, you know, hating. And people would just kind of like use it as a jab, being like, well, your friend is watching from 6 feet under, you know, like, yeah, they would just be so like, and I'm like, that has nothing to do with this person, you know, or it was due to gun violence and being like, well, maybe it has to do with something like where you came from and wrong. And he was a black man, you know, it's like, oh, you know, he was doing something that he deserved it. And it was just like those kind of conversations where I'm like, I don't know, for me, I've always thought like, I don't ever talk about the dead. You know, I think that there's a level of respect that I have and I thought other people have, but I mean, you be on the internet long enough, you see people don't have respect for anything. And it was just hard. It was hard to navigate that kind of grief, knowing my friend isn't going to be able to grow old with me. You know, he was young, 20, 25. So yeah, that was a lot.
Yeah. So the culture check I have around that is two things. So the first one is, I'm speaking to the camera, right? I'm speaking to the people out there in the audience. If you are one of these people who is doing this, cut that crap out. Like, there's no room for it. It's unnecessary. It provides no value to anyone. So stop doing it. Second thing is this, and Chris and I talk about this often. A lot of that stuff that happens, they're not real people.
No.
It's bots. Mm-hmm. Like, it's amazing what the stuff they'll put out there with these bots to attack the types of people that they don't like. And this is the thing. So when people get in their feelings, which you did and which any normal person would, what a lot of people don't realize is that those are not people talking to you. That hate isn't coming from a human. That's vitriol being sent through bots that are designed to maybe address the culture that you're trying to create, right? Around body positivity, right? There's organizations, there's countries, there's people who don't want that. So they'll attack that. They could care less about you, right? They're attacking that. So just remember that a lot of the hate, a lot of the trolling, a lot of that nonsense that you get on social, it's actually not even real. So don't get in your feelings about what a bot says. Right. When my Roomba goes around the house, I don't care what it's saying. Right. It's the same thing. Like, don't care about what the bot says. So just remember that, you know, a lot of that stuff is noise, and you need to find a way, something that you tell yourself, whether you know that, like saying that it's a bot or saying that you're bigger than that or saying that they're lesser than, whatever you need to say to not let that get into your soul and tear you apart, because you've been there. You know how that feels. Mm-hmm. And having to have that on top of the grief is unfair and it's unfathomable. So I just wanted to put that out there as a culture check. And then you and Chris and PB can comment as well.
No, yeah, thank you. I definitely think that, like, that's something I have to constantly, like, say in my head. Like, it has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with themselves. Sometimes I'll click on these pages and it's like a 13-year-old kid who's like talking about his parents getting divorced on his page. And I'm like, of course he's going to send me this random person hate, you know? And there are these systems in place that hate every single thing that I stand for, because that goes against the norms of society and what capitalism wants for women. We want to think that our bodies are trends, so that way you can pay the money to get a surgery and then you can pay the money to get rid of it. You can pay for the newer clothes or whatever is going to bring you happiness on the other side of it. But when you have somebody like me that is like, be happy with whatever clothes you have, with the body that you have, with what you look like right now, I'm stopping people's checks. So I know that makes people angry. That makes people upset. Yep. Like, no, you can't be the ripple in this. This is just how it goes. Like, your body's just going to go in and out of style so we can keep like taking so much from women. And I totally understand that. But I think it was just kind of hard navigating at the time, those two things simultaneously. But like you said, they're not real. They're not real people. And it has really nothing to do with you.
Well, yeah, 100%. I think we're just going to get more of that. The idea that the videos you watch are real, the idea that the comments you read are real, it all is in question now. And having my primary presence as an individual on X, formerly Twitter, has really helped me, because when someone says something ridiculous, which is, I think it's the easiest to do on that platform outside of comment section on YouTube. You can always just go to their profile and just, you can understand right away based on their handle. Is this a person, or is this a person of note? Is there any reason to even engage in this? And there's almost no reason to engage in it for any reason. But if you make the mistake of engaging with them, what you've done is you've boarded the ghost ship slogging across the poison swamp of social media. And you've put yourself in this terrible predicament where you're going back and forth with someone who may or may not exist. But even if they do exist, they have joined you on the ghost ship in the swamp. And that's not where you want to live your life. It's not where you want to be. So I think one more generation will probably pass where basically there will be no person, like every person born in the last 30 years will have been born with a sort of adjacent to a phone. And so they'll learn these social media norms, and maybe that'll help us identify bots a little better, because I do think bots and AI will be different, right? At least for now, AI can't be racist. It's not allowed to. Like, they're just words AI and AIs can't say. There's certain words machine learning can't say, and these language models can't say, and things they're not allowed to do by their training. Whereas a bot can quickly be a racist or quickly be a misogynist or quickly be an asshole. And you'll be able to identify those bots, I think, maybe a little bit easier. I had a bot comment on something I said last week, and I knew immediately it was a bot because my comment was sober, and it immediately came back and called me 4 curse words in response. And I'm like, oh, this is a bot because there's no way a normal person would respond to that comment that way. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. It's impossible to get to that place of vitriol from the comment that I made. So just, I would say spot on what both of you guys are saying. But if you are a real person and you're feeling bad and you want to sort of take a dump on somebody else's life, that's what the blot button is for.
Well, not anymore because of Elon.
Yeah. Well, you can still block on, you can still block on X.
But you heard like they can still see your stuff,
but they can still,
And you know what they do to me? They screenshot it and they repost it on their page.
They repost it on their stuff.
Yeah. Wow. Which is like,
there's this sense that you can tear somebody else down to lift yourself up, right?
Yeah.
But Nick, that's what I'm saying. Like, if that's a real person screenshotting and using it, they're saying, okay, they're basically doing what the blogosphere does in hip hop, mm-hmm. where by gassing, pouring fuel on a beef, let's say, you know, Kendrick and Drake, mm-hmm. that blogger actually is the winner. Mm-hmm. Like a DJ Academics is the winner in that. A Grandy is the winner in that versus either of the two artists. More than anybody, a lot of times a blogger or a podcaster will use their platform to create drama that hurts a faith, let's say, but gets them views that they can then turn around to an advertiser and say, this is my engagement level. Can we strike a deal? So it's tricky.
Yeah, PB. It is RB. Very tricky.
I think the greatest lesson we're getting from faith is that our self-esteem has to come from within. That, she's teaching us that our self-esteem does not depend on what others say about us. And it's kind of an antithesis to being an influencer, but she's saying you have to be strong from within, mm-hmm. and that what all these others are saying, what the bot is saying, what anybody with natural vitriol might be saying does not define who we are. And we have to dig within ourselves and get that. And that's where we have to love ourselves first. And that's where you build self-esteem.
Hear, hear. Well said. And a very, very good culture check, PB. A couple of quick things and we can wrap it up here. If someone came to you and said, I want to start a TikTok page tomorrow, what are the first three things you would teach them?
Film in the morning next to a window.
I'm writing this down.
The best lighting, and you don't have to go out and buy anything. Mm-hmm. Boom. If you're able to, obviously, if you're somebody that works 9 to 5 and you can't work, you know, if you can, best lighting, because that gives you the most quality type of video. Watch at least 2 to 3 hours a day, like it's your homework. Save all the videos that you see multiple of, because those are usually trending at the time. Mm-hmm. So see how you can apply a sound or a concept to what is going on in your life, you know, and then make it your own. And then once you post your videos, reply to a comment with a video if somebody has a question. That way your community knows I am engaged. And I'm here to serve you, because those people are the type of people that are going to be like, well, I'm going to follow because she answers questions. You know, there's people that don't even respond. Yeah. If you've seen my comment section, I'm liking, commenting to multiple. I almost like almost all the comments that are good, obviously, but I'm always in my comment section because I want to know, how did y'all feel about this video? You know, if it makes you guys not feel good, I want to know why. Could I have done something better? And I think those three things, that's the recipe.
Right, that second one, Chris. That second one was wonderful because she didn't say copy what other people are doing, which is what I think a lot of people try to do. Mm-hmm. She said, you know, learn what's happening and
like
adopt or adapt that to you as a creator, like what you're doing. Don't do what they do. Mm-hmm. How can you adapt what they're doing to what you're doing as a creator? That's key for me.
That's huge. And for those keeping score at home, the three pieces of, they're not really advice, but they are advice, but the three things that Faith would teach you as a new TikToker is film in the morning if you can for the best lighting. And I think also that's why we go to set so early in the morning and film. same sort of reason. Two, watch 2 to 3 hours of videos a day like it's your homework, folks, and then adopt and adapt what you see that's working into your own ecosystem, into your own life, into your own authenticity. And then last but not least, once you post, be engaged. Let the people know, oh, you're a real person. I can follow you because I know you're real. You're commenting back to me and you're part of the journey I'm on with you. So that's all incredibly huge advice. Nick mentioned this in the culture check before about you going through some dark spaces. I mentioned this at the top of the conversation, that as filmmakers, we go through that too. Almost every position in film, you know, down to the cinematographer, right? Just feeling like, oh, I'll never make DGA, or, you know, no one's hiring, or whatever it is. So when you've gotten into a dark space in your own life, how have you worked yourself through it?
I like this verse, and even if you're not religious, you know, I think it still can apply to just life. And it's goes something to like the theme of, you know, if you like wait out the night, like it won't last forever. Like the sun, joy comes in the morning. Mm-hmm. Sometimes my nights may look like weeks, you know, or might be dark months, you know, the night may last, but it won't last forever because joy will come in the morning. So I always hold on to that. And there's been sometimes it's long lasting, but that holding on to that joy always feels worth it. You know, coming on the other side of it and being like, whew, I know night's going to come again, because that's just how life is. You can't avoid the nighttime. But right, if you hold on to the morning, I feel like joy is always going to be waiting for you there.
Yeah, it's a great, great, great point. And it's this idea that I feel like there might have been a Kanye West song that kind of mentioned it too, where at least that was that track, Nick, where his mom was talking, like, I think it was on the last sort of gospel album he did, the idea was that it cannot be night forever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So just that ability to hang on and know that there'll be ups and downs, but there'll be really great days too. I guess in a lot of ways I'm still selling because everything is sales, but in a former life, I always loved and embraced no, because I knew there was only so many no's in a row before you get the yes. There can't be an infinite amount of no's, or there'd be no marketplace for the thing that you're selling. So it just, a reality. And if you can muscle through that and know that brighter things are coming, that's really great. So with that,
yeah, Nick, as they say, this too shall pass.
This too shall pass. Yes.
Yep. So with that, Faith, I know we're like Chris said, we're winding it down, but we always have to ask this question of our guests. So what does it mean to you to make it?
I feel like making it means that you, are happy in what you do, regardless of the numerical value attached to it. Mm. So sometimes making it can look like being a teacher, you know, or a volunteer, and having the time in your life to be able to do that, because time is such a luxury. I think that I feel like I've already made it, and I feel like I made it even in the beginning of this journey, because I have the time and space to just do what I love. Like, I wish I could say like, oh, I feel like I made it because I reached some like career milestone, but it wasn't that. It was something that like gave me peace in my heart. Like, this is my passion in life. I am here and I am living my dreams.
Love it.
Love it. Yep. That's all we can say. We love it.
Fantastic answer. And Faith, you've been really wonderful. This has been such a great conversation. I've guaranteed to have a great day now. So thank you. Thank you for that. I'm sure Nick and PB feel the same way. Can you tell everybody where they can find you on social media, on the internet, support you? And then maybe if you want to shout out the fashion brand that you think is doing the best job for plus size people and individuals from a quality standpoint, cut, design standpoint, everything.
Okay, yeah, you can definitely find me at Faith with a PH, Montoya, on all across all platforms. And I think right now a brand that I've really just been loving, and you can tell maybe because it's made by a plus size woman, is Yitty.
How do you spell that?
Yitty, Y-I-T-T-Y.
Y-I-T-T-Y. Got it.
Yes.
Okay.
Made by Lizzo. There's just so much like craftsmanship that I feel like she takes into account that even brands that carry bigger sizes sometimes can overlook. But yeah, I've been loving their brand, especially for like loungewear. Now it's getting colder outside, so like for layers and stuff.
I love it. Okay, so Yitty, shout out to Yitty, shout out to Lizzo, dropping the quality clothing on us, and shout out to you. For everyone watching, everyone listening, you heard what she said on IG, on TikTok. You can find her at Faith Montoya. That's PHAITHMONTOYA. And you can, your YouTube handle is just at Faith. Is that right?
Yeah.
So
or you can just search for Faith Montoya. But I'm going to tell the audience one thing.
Yes.
Wait. I got to tell them.
Please, young Nicholas.
Yeah, I got to tell them.
Yep.
So here's the deal. Faith's name, because it's PH, the autocorrect hates her name. Okay. So it is going to change her name to F-A-I-T-H. I'm telling you, it's just going to change it. It just does it. Even if you don't tell it to do it. So before you hit enter, right, make sure you change it back. Yep. Right. So I'm just telling you, just make sure that you fix the autocorrect on that name, and it's P-H-A-I-T-H.
Yeah. And shout out to Apple, by the way, messages. It learns over time based on what you typically type in. When we did that short film last year, Skakifis, Apple did not like the word Skakifis.
Right, I can imagine.
At all. And now anytime I type T and S together, it just pops up the word Skakifis. I know what you're typing. You're typing that. So your phone will learn from you. So boom, there you go. And speaking of viewers and followers and subscribers, they're really, really important. And so don't forget to hit subscribe on this video if you're watching on YouTube. Like it, comment. We, like Faith, are real people and respond to every single comment, like every comment that's likable, right?
Right.
That's likable. that's likable. And we do that on social media as well, but we're mostly engaged on YouTube. We're working on getting engaged in these other places, but on YouTube for sure. And if you're listening to this podcast on Apple or Spotify right now, please do go leave us a 5-star review. Now, if you don't feel like we're a 5-star podcast, I want you to be your authentic self, but we do appreciate the 5-star review. And if you want to leave us some words as well, that would be wonderful. Those really, really matter when it comes to search. You can find us on social media at _makeitpodcast. So _makeitpodcast. And you can find me at @flameinyourheart. You can find Nick at his email at nick@bonsai.film. You can reach out to him there, or they call me Mr. Bugs on Instagram as well. So do reach out there. We have incredible gear, buttery soft t-shirts. Faith just mentioned it's getting colder outside. Why not pick up a hoodie, sweater, long sleeve t-shirt like I'm wearing right now? You see the Make It Tokyo right here. It's a beautiful little design shirt. Cotton Bureau is a wonderful partner. They reject 90% of all designs, but ours is in the shop. So go there and search for the Make It podcast on Cotton Bureau. That's cottonbureau.com, and pick yourself up some wonderful gear. And I think you'll be very, very pleased. And so with that, Nick, can you leave us with the credo?
Of course. And I will reiterate the pleasure and the blessing that it is to be able to do this with you lovely gentlemen. It is a pleasure and a blessing to have guests like you, Faith, who speak the same language that we speak, right? Which is basically, we're entertaining, we're educating, but we're really just reaching out our hands to other people that we know need help, because, you know, we too need help in our own lives. Yes. So we appreciate you. Thank you for being a part of the show. And with that, I will say to our friends, our family, our fans, our fellow filmmakers out there, be better, be creative, be engaged.
And thank you for listening. Nick, Faith, talk to you soon.
Yep. We'll do it again. Thank you, Faith. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Love you, PB.
All right, guys.
Bye. Be good.
It's time to turn your daydream into your dream job. Wix gives you the power to turn your passion into a moneymaker with a website that fits your unique vision and drives you towards your goals. Let your ideas flow with AI tools that guide you, but give you full control and flexibility. Manage your business from one dashboard and keep it growing with built-in marketing features. Get everything you need to turn your part-time passion into a full-time business. Go to Wix.com.